Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ray, and welcome to the RayWenderlich.com podcast. In this podcast, we'll keep you up to date with the latest app development tech talk. Now, here are your hosts, Mick and Jake.
Hey, Jake, how are you?
Good, Mick. How are you?
Not so bad. Just recovering. Had a nice weekend because last week was a bit mad wrapping up WatchKit by tutorials, but it's great that I can finally say that that's out today. So
awesome. Yeah, awesome. Congratulations on that.
Thanks very much. It's been an immense project, and it's been full of aggressive deadlines and timescales because we've only had WatchKit for a couple of months now. But, you know, we decided early on that we wanted to be first to market, and I think we've achieved that. And we've got a really, really solid reference for WatchKit with full of really good tutorials. So I'm really happy how it all came together.
That's great. You've been working hard on the SDK ever since it came out, right?
Yeah, so we put out a tutorial on the site the day after WatchKit was released, the first beta. Greg wrote the tutorial and I built the sample app that you built as you worked through that tutorial. Greg and I put together, I think, 17-part video series. Greg did the sort of earlier 8 or 9 videos and I did the latter 8 or 9 videos. And then after that, we've been involved in the book pretty much since then, as well as both Greg and I again did a session each at RW DevCon on WatchKit, which went down really well as well. Yeah, so pretty much it's been WatchKit ever since it was released for me for the past few months.
That's great. I haven't played with it as much. When it first came out, I looked at it and I couldn't really think of any obvious ideas for. I mostly do photo and video recording apps. Things like Instagram, for example. And okay. So far, I haven't had any inspiration on the perfect way to integrate the watch. But I suppose you could do a shutter button. But it seems like if you're taking a picture, you kind of want to see what the viewfinder's seeing. And I guess until we get some hardware, it's going to be hard to know if we can push even a reduced resolution version of what the phone camera is seeing to the watch. Do you have an opinion on that? Do you think that'll work or do you think it'll be too slow?
Personally, it's all best guess at the minute, like you say, because we don't actually have access to any hardware. And I know they've tried to build some stuff into the simulator to make it behave more like the watch will in real life. But I think it would be too, there would be too much of a delay between trying to send that. It definitely wouldn't be a live feed. It's going to be, I think if you got it, it would be incredibly compressed images and mm-hmm. it would be set sort of several seconds behind what was being taken. So I don't think it would be something like if you wanted to do a photo shutter, if that was the app that you wanted to implement, I don't think it's something that you could do for, if you wanted to capture a moment really quickly, rather than you could probably use it if you're getting all your family at a wedding, and you've got everybody stood there and you can wait, a few seconds. That's not too much a problem. But if you wanted to capture something that was happening immediately, then I don't think that would work. I mean, I've tried sending images from iPhone to iPhone using the multi-peer network stuff, which runs over uh-huh. Bluetooth, uh-huh. and that was incredibly slow. So I can't say that the watch is any better. I mean, the only thing that I've thought that we have talked about in the past, I think we actually talked about this when we did the earlier episode on WatchKit with Ben Morrow, was that the watch does actually have a Wi-Fi chip in it, and I think that it does create an ad hoc network, especially for when it's installing the apps and things like that and transferring images over. So we're all expecting everything to go over Bluetooth, but it might be that it goes over Wi-Fi, in which case it would be a little bit quicker. But I still don't think it's going to be something where you can have that kind of the kind of feedback that you would need to do a photo shutter app, for example. But I was curious about this because I know, Jake, you work with clients a lot, and I was curious if they'd come to you sort of asking about the watch or, saying we want to get a watch extension of our app, ready for the store. Have you seen anything like that or?
No. And I mean, I think it's because I do mostly photo apps, but they haven't, none of my clients have come asking specifically for that. Partly the reason I want to think up a good idea is because I want to be able to, I'd love to work with the SDK and do something on the watch. So I plan to get one as soon as it's available. So I don't know what it is exactly I'm going to be doing with it, but I'd love to be able to go to one of my clients and say, hey, I have this great idea that, hopefully we can, be one of the early adopters of this new technology. But like I say, so far I haven't really come up with a, you know, like a killer idea for a video or a photo app. So
are you going to go for
hopefully I'll have a dream and something will hit. Lightning will strike. Sorry, go ahead.
Are you going to go for the solid gold one?
Probably not. Based on the rumors of how much it's going to cost, I will probably go for one that's less than thousands of dollars. What do you think the high end one's going to cost?
I mean, I've seen anything from like $2,000 to $4,000, you know, all the way up to $15,000 to $20,000. So I wouldn't want to hazard a guess, to be honest with you. Like
the other thing about that is that, I mean, I don't want to buy a, you know, multi-$1,000 watch that I am sure I'm going to replace next year because the hardware will accelerate its development pretty quickly. So I mean, we'll see how that all plays out. It'll be interesting to see the prices and, you know, how the cost is split up between the band and the part that would need to, you know, be replaced. But
yeah,
I can't see myself spending any more than I'd want the bigger screen. So I'll probably, if that's extra, I'll probably pay for that, but that'll be about it.
I mean, I think if you've got, you know, $15,000 to $20,000 to spend on a watch, then you're probably not going to be worrying that you need to upgrade it next year. Do you know what I mean? Like it's pitched at a different type of person than we are. Like I'm not going to spend $20,000 on a gold watch. One, because I don't have that amount of money, but two, I'm not a big fan of the gold one anyway. Yeah, I like the stainless steel strap one. You know, where it's all like the mm-hmm. traditional link.
Yeah, band. Me too. That's the one I go for.
Yeah.
So that we got some information. There were some, I don't know if they were rumors or if they were validated about the battery life, and it was like 3.5 hours. Is that right? Continuous use.
Yeah, I think.
Are you worried at all about that not being enough? I have my own opinion, but what do you think?
I mean, this kind of goes back a little bit to what you're saying, you know, about understanding what you can actually do with the SDK. I think Apple have been very clever here because they want to have a very particular type of app on the watch. You know, they've already gone on about if you measure interactions with your iOS apps in minutes, then you should be measuring interactions with your watch extension in seconds. And if that's the case, then these aren't going to be, you know, you're not going to get a fully fledged Twitter client or a fully fledged Facebook client on your watch. And I think that's where these different hour variants come from, is that if people are putting apps on the watch that people are going to be engrossed in and using all the time, then it's going to drain the battery. But that's kind of not what Apple's looking for. Apple's looking for just something where, you know, you're just going to get this quick piece of information that you need at a glance. And then, you know, if you want to, you know, investigate that further, or if you want to look at something, then you'll hand off to the iOS app and then, you know, pick it up on your phone. So I'm not too concerned about the battery life, because the other thing that I've seen is that it can sort of last between 9 to 12 hours on what they would call normal use, is if you're using it like a watch rather than a mini phone. And that's how I see myself using it. So I think anybody who is going to be sort of really like a watch junkie, if you like, and replacing their phone or the way that they use their phone with the watch, then yeah, you know, they are probably going to be a little bit disappointed if they're only going to get 4 hours out of it. But I can't see many people using the watch that way. I mean, for no other reason really than we had some 3D printed phones at Ardui DevCon, and they were done to scale, so they were exact same size as the watch that Apple are going to release. And as soon as you put your finger over the screen to tap it, the whole screen was like your finger covered the whole screen. So yeah, whatever content was on the screen was obscured, and you can't really, you know, you're not going to be able to do much in terms of an app if you can't see what you're doing because it's all under your finger. So there's all these kind of things that people are going to need to think about, and I think a lot of people have got big, you know, ideas for when this is going to be released and the apps that they're going to build, and it's going to be a case of scaling it back and scaling it back and scaling it back and really just pulling out the functionality that belongs on the watch as opposed to the phone.
Yeah, that's my guess. When people kind of were worried, it seemed like that scared some people, and I just thought, we have no idea the use cases, but I can't imagine that you'd be using the watch for more than 60 seconds at a time very often. It seems like most of the time it'll just be 2 seconds, right? Just long enough for it to to notify you something's come in, to take a quick glance at it, and that's it. And then maybe some specific things you do with it, you'll use it a little bit more. But as soon as it becomes something where you're going to be reading more than, you know, two sentences of text, seems like you're going to want to pull your phone out. So I don't know. We'll see. It'll be interesting. Obviously, Apple's testing all the use cases, and they've got some idea of how it'll actually be used, and they're designing it based on that. But then, you know, as soon as third parties get a hold of the hardware and start creating new ideas, I think it's kind of up for grabs how things actually play out.
Yeah, we'll have to see. And I think actually it'd be good to get another opinion on this. So I'd like to bring in Mike Oliver, who is the director of engineering at Runkeeper, and was also one of the two tech editors on WatchKit by Tutorials. So hello, Mike.
Hi guys, how's it going?
Not so bad, you?
Pretty good.
Sounds so. Before we get sort of your opinion on WatchKit and the state of other various smartwatch platforms, could you just tell us a little bit about, you know, who is Mike Oliver?
Sure, absolutely. So as you mentioned, I'm director of engineering at Runkeeper. Runkeeper, if you're not familiar, is a personal trainer in your pocket app. We track your distance-based runs, bike rides, etc. when you go out with your phone, give you a platform for setting your goals and meeting your fitness needs. I've been doing mobile development for my entire engineering career. Before, I've been in iOS now for 4 or 5 years, and before that was doing BlackBerry and Windows Mobile and some other things that I'm not doing anymore for a variety of reasons. So really, you know, I've just always really liked the mobile experience and engineering great things in mobility.
Fantastic. Now, I know, because we spoke offline about this, that you've had some exposure to some of the other smartwatch platforms. So I was just keen to get your opinion on sort of the current state of all the smartwatch platforms and then how Apple's Apple Watch and WatchKit compare to those.
Yeah, I think we're in a really interesting state with the current watch platforms. It's very akin to when Apple was first coming out with the iPhone, where you know, there were some established players in the smartphone space. There were some other up-and-coming players coming out around the same time as the iPhone. As far as the watches are concerned, you've got some established players right now with, you know, Pebble is probably one of the biggest ones that people have heard of. Not quite as established, but there's some interesting parallels when you look at Pebble versus the Apple Watch that's coming out and some of the other smartphones that were out a while ago when the iPhone was coming out. Android Wear is obviously very interesting too on the Android platform, and a couple of other niche players around Wahoo Fitness and some of the things that we integrate with at Runkeeper.
Okay, so I mean, have you got Runkeeper apps on all these platforms?
Yes, we do. We've done Pebble integration, we've done a Wahoo integration, and Android Wear as well.
And how have you found that as opposed to working with WatchKit? Because obviously I know you've had a lot of time with WatchKit over the last couple of months.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, each of those platforms is all very different and has their own pros and cons. You look at something like Pebble, where you know, they emphasize battery life and sacrifice a black and white screen because of it, and the development environment is completely different. They give you an SDK for working with it client side on the iOS side, but they have a completely different custom SDK for trying to do custom stuff on the watch. Compare that with something like WatchKit, where obviously everything is 100% embedded in Xcode and either in Swift or Objective-C. But the UI capabilities for something like Apple Watch are completely different than with something like Pebble. Obviously, having a full color interface on Apple Watch is, you know, one of the most striking differences. Having a touch interface on Apple Watch compared to the other ones like Pebble and Wahoo, where it's completely hardware button based.
I have a question about just kind of the use case. Have you been able to use these other devices as a user, the Pebble or the Android Wear? I mean, have you gone out and actually just worn these for a week or so, and just to kind of see how you interact with it?
Yeah, personally, I wear a Pebble, and honestly, I was not sold. I started working with the Pebble with Runkeeper almost 2 years ago. I wasn't honestly sold on the use case of having a watch. You know, I was one of these people that thought part of the reason I have a smartphone is because I don't have to have a watch anymore. If I want to know the time, I'll just pull it out of my pocket. But within a week or two, I was completely reverse course, completely sold on the use case as a whole. Just being able to glance down and get simple things like, you know, what is that text message that I just got? What is that email that I just got? Be able to decide whether or not I want to pull out my phone or leave it in my pocket and deal with it later. The use cases I'm totally sold on.
So do you have, you heard me and Mick speak a little bit about battery life and about, you know, 3.5 hours. Do you have any insight on that as somebody who's actually used a smart watch? Are you almost always just looking at it for a few seconds, or are there things that you do on your Pebble that kind of have like an extended period of time where the thing's on?
No, for me, I think the use case is very much focused around a few seconds at a time. You know, I think about it when smartphone development really became prevalent, it took a lot of people to really realize that it was about what you could get done when you're standing in line at the grocery store, what you could get done while you're, you know, potentially in a cab ride or on the train. That's the smartphone case, and everybody had to shrink down their timelines for how long they think it would take the user to do something. With the watch, you have to drastically shrink it down again, where your users are really only going to be looking at your watch for seconds. I think you guys said it before, right? You need to be measuring your user workflows in seconds rather than minutes.
The RayWenderlich.com podcast will be right back. But first, a message from our sponsor.
Are you interested in promoting your tool or service to top iOS developers? The RayWenderlich.com podcast is a great place to advertise. We have an audience of more than 4,000 top iOS developers per episode who are all dedicated to mastering their craft. To find out more about advertising on this podcast, please visit RayWenderlich.com/advertise.
So let's return a little bit to actual Apple's watch kit. Can you kind of go over just how does a WatchKit app work?
Sure. Yeah. At a high level, Apple did something really interesting where they're basically building watch apps off the same extension paradigm that they've used with Today extensions or Share extensions that other people might be familiar with. What's really interesting about that is that your code is largely running on the phone as opposed to the watch. And it means that your phone will be simply communicating with the watch and updating the UI. It means that your watch extension is a different app than your main app, which is ultimately embedded inside of it, which adds some interesting abilities. And then from a UI perspective, they also did some really interesting things where they built a whole new UI paradigm for how you build buttons and views and things on the watch. There is no UI kit on the watch. There is no core animation. There is no springs and struts. There is no auto layout. It's all these WK interface buttons, WK interface groups that is this brand new thing dedicated just to the watch.
I've heard things have changed kind of over as they've introduced new betas, but what is the current state in terms of can doing something on the watch start the app on your phone? Like what's the interaction? Does the thing have to start on the phone and only push to the watch? How does that work?
Yeah, so they did introduce a new API. I don't remember if it was beta 2 or beta 3 that allows you to, from the watch, essentially open the app, open your parent application if it's not already open, and essentially send in a message. And then from there, your parent app can do whatever it needs to do before it then responds back to the watch. So they really made it pretty configurable so that that piece is largely up to the creativity of the engineer.
But it doesn't work the other way around, though, right? You can't launch the watch app from the phone.
Yeah, that's correct. But I think that makes sense. I mean, if you've already taken out your phone and you've got your phone in your hand, I think the use cases are going to be much smaller that you'd really want to pick something up on your watch from your phone directly.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. Now, just a little bit earlier, you touched on this new layout paradigm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we were first handed WatchKit and we thought, okay, there's no auto layout, and that kind of makes sense because auto layout can be quite expensive and CPU intensive if you've got, you know, these crazy layouts to work out all the constraints and where everything should be aligned and positioned, etc. So you're thinking, okay, have they gone back to springs and struts? So we look for those, and no, there's no springs and struts. So can you just shed a little bit more light on what this new layout paradigm is?
Yeah, it's essentially, so you have 12 or so classes provided by Apple that are really just, these are the only classes that you can use. And in terms of layout is concerned, they call them groups. You define what things are going together based on which groups they're in. And ultimately, those groups can be laid out as either vertical or horizontal. And so the things that you put in will largely stack either vertically or horizontally within that group. And then within the groups, if you know you're working with, say, a couple buttons within a group, you can specify that those buttons are either left aligned or right aligned or center aligned to give you really a little bit more configurability. And then from a sizing perspective, it's all very relative. So you can either say this thing is a fixed amount of space, or this thing takes up as much space as, say, the text space and it needs, or potentially this is 100% of the group that it's in, or 50% of the group that it's in.
So you also mentioned as well that, you know, we're restricted to just a subset of classes in WatchKit, and they all start WK interface. So these don't descend from things like UI view. Like you said, there's no UI kit. And also, Apple have been very careful not to use words such as view in these things. It's all interface. And I think we refer to them as interface elements in the book. Can you sort of give us an overview of what kind of controls are available that are going to be familiar to iOS developers? And then also, I wanted to talk to you about, is it possible to create custom interface controls for the watch?
Sure, yeah. At a high level, the controls that are available are really akin to some of the default controls that are there in UIKit. So things like there's not a UI button, but a WK interface button. There's not a UI switch, but there is a switch control. There's a progress bar, a label, obviously, for putting in for displaying text. There are some more interesting ones that are watch specific, including the date control, and the there's like essentially a date counter that allows you to count up or count down, similar to what a watch might look like. You're right, they don't extend UI view, or they don't extend any view parent class. They're all an extension of NS object, and really that's part of the way I think Apple forces the OS through these. You know, you can't extend it. It has to be done in this way. It has to be within this limited set. There's kind of, I think on its face, a lot of people were bummed that they couldn't do some of the more interesting animations or custom controls that they wanted to do. And to some extent, that's true. If you're familiar with gestures on an iPhone client, you're not able to do that on the watch. There is no, you cannot do a double tap gesture, you cannot do a pan gesture, anything like that. The only thing you can really do is a button and really absorb that tap. But people have been starting to do some really interesting things with this one hook that they really give you, which is the ability to animate images over a span. So you can make a custom control that animates from one place to the next. And there's actually, it's honestly my favorite chapter in the WatchKit book that goes through images and really shows how that's done. Before reading that chapter, I didn't realize how good that would really look. But it's amazing what people are really able to do. So that's really cool.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that we've realized, and I know I've sort of spoken with the WatchKit evangelist a few times on Twitter, Jake Behrens, and also I can't remember the other chap's name, Dave. What's his surname? Dave DeLong. Who both of them have promoted the fact that what a lot of people haven't realised is the button is itself a group. So whilst when you drag it on from the object library, it still resembles a button. You don't have to stay with that look and feel. You can put images in there, you can put text in there, you can embed new groups in there. So you get, that's the way that you would get the response of the tap in the same way you might use a tap recognizer, gesture recognizer. But then, you, like you say, you can trigger, you know, the series of these images which animate over time to at least get some customization of these controls. And so it's really good that it's given us at least one control that they can manipulate in that way. But one of the things that I was wanting to sort of pick your brains about is, do you think that this is to do with the way the watch and the iPhone communicate? Because these objects on the watch, as far as I understand it, aren't legitimate objects in the same sense as they are on, say, the iPhone. Because the real, you know, the business logic that's happening underneath is actually happening on the phone, and it's being communicated over Bluetooth. So do you think that, you know, is because of the piping underneath, that's one another reason why we can't extend these controls? Or do you think it purely is because they want to drive the look and the feel and the OS so it's consistent?
Yeah, I honestly think it's a little bit of both. You know, when you think about what Apple typically does when they release some of these new things, you know, they really, I think they obviously really care about the experience, and, you know, they are really worried about, at least at the start, providing a consistent experience for new users. And the reality is everyone's a new user. That being said, I think it does coincide well with their obvious concerns about battery life and making sure that the communication mechanism between the phone and the watch is both efficient and widely available. So I think, you know, it's largely something that probably benefits them in multiple ways.
So you mentioned a couple things that that are covered in the book, but can you kind of give our listeners just kind of the scope of what all is in the book and kind of who's the intended audience?
Sure. Yeah. The book does a really nice job of kind of walking through the entirety of what you might do in a watch app, starting with a basic hello world and dealing with architecture to all the basic controls that we talked about, navigation, moving around within the watch, menus, and then goes a little bit deeper on a bunch of different topics, communication with the parent application, the image stuff that I talked about before. So really, it'll cover a pretty wide range of anything that you might want to do with the watch app. As far as who it's really geared towards, I think it's really approachable for anybody with any iOS experience, and you know, anybody can really get in there, and anybody who's interested in creating a watch app.
So was this your first time editing a book?
Yes, it was.
Okay, what was that like? Did it take a lot of time? Like, what was that experience like?
It was really cool. You know, I didn't really come in with all that many preconceived notions of how it would go. You know, everything that anybody cares about takes time, right? So, of course, it took me some time to, because I, you know, put a lot of thought and a lot of care into it. But it was really cool to learn things from other people that I hadn't necessarily thought about with the watch. You know, I mentioned the image stuff before, but there are other things in there that, you know, even surprised me in terms of things that could be done. So that was really cool to go through and see.
I'm curious, Mike, did it take more time than you anticipated?
I'm not sure that it took more time than I anticipated, but from an editing perspective, it was kind of feast and famine, where, you know, a lot of chapters would come in all at once, and we'd go through and spend a lot of time there, and then there'd be a break where there weren't any other chapters coming in, and then the next set of chapters come in, and we're going through all of them all at once again.
I heard the other editor was really difficult to work with. Did you find that to be true?
Well, you know, it's cool because it allowed me to read all the emails from Nick in an accent in my head, which, you know, allowed me to make all kinds of stories up in my mind about who exactly is this Mick fellow.
Mick's edited some of my stuff before, and so I know what it's like.
You can start a group. So, I mean, as we've already mentioned, the book is out today. So anybody interested in WatchKit, you know, get to the site, get it ordered. I think there's a discount on the print version if you want to buy both the PDF and the print version. But this book is also part of the Spring Swift Fling celebration that's currently underway at raywenderlich.com. Mike, can you just remind our listeners what that is?
Yeah, it's really cool. So in addition to the book coming out today, there's going to be a bunch of different WatchKit specific stuff coming out on the site over the rest of the week. Come back every day and check out the new content.
Okay, chaps. Thanks for that. I think that's a good place to wrap this episode up. So thanks again for joining us, Mike.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for having me.
No, our pleasure. And so last week I put out a call for people to get in touch with us and to give us some feedback. And we have had some really positive feedback this week, which is really good to see. But I just want to sort of mention one piece that we got. And this was from a chap called, and I'm hoping I'm going to get his name right, Fouad Kamal, who sent us a really long email telling us all about how he likes the podcast and how it keeps him interested in this 1,400 mile commute that he has to make every weekend. And that's the kind of thing that we were looking for. It goes on to tell us what he likes and what he doesn't like about the podcast, which is really good. But I just wanted to personally thank him for putting the effort to get that email in. If you guys do want to send some feedback, then as usual, it's podcast@raywenderlich.com. And also, if you like the episodes, then don't forget to leave reviews on iTunes. We do hope you enjoy the podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
And that's a wrap. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the RayWenderlich.com podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and don't forget to leave a rating on iTunes. See you next time.